Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, July 17, 2020. South Sudan police say they have arrested five suspects in connection with the killing of a public prosecutor in Malakal town.
Also, there is a state prosecution, which has also opened a case. Normally, we have two criminal information to be done in our legal system. The government has the right of lodging an investigation.
And Sudanese warring parties resume peace talks in Juba.
If we negotiate the security arrangements very well, in good faith involving all of us, and have genuine security arrangements, we will say we have reached a real peace agreement. Because of all the problems, behind them is insecurity.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Malakal have arrested three civilians and two soldiers suspected of having information on the killing of a senior judge in the Upper Nile State capital Malakal on Monday. The South Sudan National Police Service spokesperson says investigations are going on and the killers of late Thomas Aban Akol Ajawin will face the law. For VOA News, Lasuba Memo reports from Juba.
Hundreds of mourners sang hymns while others wept openly as the late Thomas Aban Akol Ajawin was being laid to rest on the outskirts of Malakal town on Tuesday. Lawyer Yohannes Akol Ajawin, a blood brother to the deceased, urged community members to remain calm and let the rule of law take its course.
We believe that if the killing is politically motivated, then we feel that is unfortunate because the South can take all of us. We believe in a Southern Sudan that is stable and peaceful and where all the communities are living in peace together as they used to be. So we will not like any instability because of the killing of our late brother.
National Justice Minister Ruben Madol said on state-run television Wednesday his ministry will make sure Ajawin's killers are brought to justice.
To condemn act of this targeted attack and still that search is going on and the investigation is also going to continue. We in the ministry will keenly follow up with the authorities in Malakal to make sure that these culprits are apprehended and eventually justice is served.
Yohannes Ajawin says his family has filed a case with the police over the killing.
Also, there is a state prosecution, which has also opened a case. Normally, we have two criminal information to be done in our legal system. The government has the right of lodging an investigation. We have also requested an investigation of the police. So we are cooperating with them, with the Minister of Justice. So we have nothing special as a family that we can do.
National Police Spokesperson Major General Daniel Justin says police have arrested five suspects in connection with the killing.
We are investigating and we have gathered enough information. As a result, we managed to arrest five suspects and we are still looking for one suspect.
Justin says the five people arrested recently threatened Judge Ajawin over a particular issue which Justin would not disclose.
We had cases with which passed through them. Some people are threatening him, like threatening him with death, and as a result, these are the information gathered so far, and we are still investigating.
The last funeral rite for late Thomas Aban Akol Ajawin was held today. Yohannes Akol Ajawin and Justin are both calling on members of the public to exercise restraint and patience as law enforcement investigates the killing. Justin says the outcome of the investigation will be made public. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Yeah. The acting humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan, Mohamed Ayoya, has condemned the killing of 2 aid workers and 4 community members in Duke County in Jonglo State. The UN says a non-armed group attacked NGO staff who were providing health care and nutrition services to community members on Monday. The humanitarian coordinator called on authorities in South Sudan to take swift action to ensure safety and security of aid workers in the country. This incident brings the number of humanitarian aid workers killed in South Sudan since 2013 to 122. Still on humanitarian issues, the United Nations says a quarter of the population of Sudan is facing a looming food crisis. Humanitarian partners in Sudan released an integrated food security phase classification earlier this month, which shows 9.6 million Sudanese are in acute food insecurity because of conflict, high inflation, and COVID-19. Save the Children, country director for Sudan, says children are hardest hit by food insecurity in Sudan. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Humanitarian partners in Sudan released an integrated food security phase classification earlier this month, indicating nearly 10 million Sudanese are in high acute food insecurity due to conflict, high inflation, and COVID-19.
The country is experiencing one of the worst food crises in recent years. This is due to conflict-related displacement and high inflation rates on top of the impacts of the pandemic's prevention measures. Almost a quarter of the population, some 9.6 million Sudanese, are now severely food insecure. These numbers are the highest ever recorded in the history of the food security phase classification system in Sudan.
That's Stéphane Dujarric, the United Nations Secretary General's spokesperson, is speaking at a briefing in New York yesterday. About 10 humanitarian partners, including USAID, the World Food Programme, the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, and Save the Children released its Integrated Food Security Phase Classification or IPC report, a highly technical look at food insecurity in Sudan covering June through September. Dujarric says, aside from 9.6 million people experiencing high levels of acute food insecurity, 15.9 million people have been classified as under stress.
Food insecurity is especially concerning in some states such as North Kordofan, where the number of people facing food insecurity has increased by 335%. We, along with our humanitarian partners, have provided food assistance to approximately 2.3 million people in the first quarter of this year. But more has to be done and more funding is urgently needed.
The IPC report says the current food crisis in Sudan is caused by protracted displacement, economic decline and inflation, and high food price hikes and exacerbated by the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. Arshad Malik is Save the Children Sudan Country Director. He says the number of severely food insecure people has jumped from 3 million in previous years to 9.6 million this year. Khartoum alone is estimated to have 1.4 million people who are severely food insecure. Malik says, during the fasting month of Ramadan, 2 months ago, many families could not find food to eat at the end of the day. He says hard economic times like this especially affects children.
We heard from families that some of the families actually use water to break their fast because they had nothing to eat. In that economic situation, families are forced to get their children married earlier, especially girls are more vulnerable. And then otherwise, generally children are more vulnerable to child labor, sexual abuse, physical abuse.
Aside from children, Malik says, 1.3 million internally displaced persons are particularly affected by food insecurity because of conflict in Darfur, South Kordofan, and Blue Nile states.
More than 1.3 million people who are internally displaced because of the conflict, and 50% of that is population. They are already deprived of basic services. They had less access to health, to food, to education. And with this complicated situation where the government is facing a big economic downfall because of lack of support from the international community, they are even more vulnerable.
Sudan's annual inflation rate surged to 136.36% in June, compared to 114.33% in May, the Central Bureau of Statistics reported on Tuesday. Almost a quarter of the Sudanese population is severely food insecure. Both Malik and Dujarric are urging the international community to support the government's efforts to address the food crisis and stabilize its faltering economy. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Several Sudanese rebel groups are having face-to-face talks with delegates from the Sudan's transitional government in Juba to iron out security arrangements. A member of the Rebel Sudan Revolutionary Front says the two sides have agreed on all other issues, including power sharing. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Tothekeo Gadluak, chief mediator at the talks, said Thursday that security arrangements are the final sticking point to be worked out before the parties sign a comprehensive peace deal.
If we negotiate the security arrangements very well, in good faith involving all of us, and have genuine security arrangements, we will say we have reached a real peace agreement. Because of all the problems, behind them is insecurity. And once we resolve the issue of insecurity, we have resolved all the problems.
Al-Hadi Idris, chairperson of Sudan Revolutionary Front, or SRF, a coalition of 9 rebel groups negotiating with the Sudanese government, says there is genuine political will on the part of all sides to end the conflicts in Darfur, Blue Nile, and South Kordofan. Idris says the parties have agreed on almost all issues, including power sharing, distribution of wealth, and self-autonomy in the Blue Nile and South Kordofan regions. Idris says the two sides also agreed to a 39-month transitional period beginning on the day a peace agreement is signed. He says the parties also agreed that those in power during the transitional period shall not stand for elections.
On the power sharing, we agreed that the SRF, that Sudan Revolutionary Front, is going to have 3 seats, or in the Sovereign Council, we're going to have 25% in both the parliament and the executive branch or arm of the government, that ministerial council.
Idris says the security talks are focused on how Sudan will create a unified army that is tasked with restoring peace and stability across the entire country, and especially the regions of Darfur, Blue Nile, and South Kordofan.
At the end of the day, the main aim of the security arrangement is to have what we call that one unified Sudan army. As we speak right now, we have several armies. We have our own armies. The government of Sudan, it has the rapid support. So this is a very unique situation. And this is not an ideal situation in one country to have more than army.
Idris likened the ongoing peace process to a roadmap that will open a new dawn for Sudan, but would not say when he thought the journey would end.
There is a political will from the both parties, from us, from the government of Sudan, and the mediation also is doing a very fantastic job to make sure that to see Sudanese manage to conclude this peace process as soon as possible. So I can see that peace is coming very soon, but when that is will depend to how the discussion.
Talks between the government and rebel groups started in October of last year and mediated in Juba under South Sudan President Salva Kiir and his top aides. The peace process has brought together several rebel groups that had been fighting the Sudanese government for years in the Darfur, Blue Nile, and South Kordofan regions. Several rounds of talks mediated by the African Union failed to deliver a peace deal to end conflicts that have killed thousands of civilians in Darfur, Blue Nile, and South Kordofan, and displaced thousands of others from those regions. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what are African scientists doing to find a cure for the corona pandemic? Well, we have an answer for you right after this break.
do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
When you make a mistake, do you admit it or just move on and try not to do it again?
When I realize that I've done something wrong, but of course I have to make sure that I make a correction out of what I have done. Because sometimes there are things we do them and afterwards you learn from them as such.
It depends on the mistake, but most of the time I tend to realize my mistakes. And where it is necessary, I apologize. Why should I keep on moving when I've made a mistake? I've made a mistake, I have to apologize.
When I've done something wrong, I do admit. At the same time, I choose to move forward with my life.
Well, it is hard to admit mistakes. So yeah, usually the first option is to move on and try not to do it again. I think that's my first go-to option.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Sudan has approved a request by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights to establish a country bureau to help the government as it moves through democratic transition to become a society based on human rights principles. The announcement and a review of the human rights situation in Sudan were presented Thursday at a meeting of the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schrein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The High Commissioner's Office welcomes Sudan's cooperation and willingness to work with its staff to advance the rights and freedoms of its people. It says it plans to focus on several key areas that match the government's priorities. These include the strengthening of the rule of law, preventing violations, enhancing equality, and countering discrimination. UN Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights, Nada Al-Nashif, says the Sudanese government already has taken bold steps to enhance the protection and promotion of human rights in the country. She notes it has repealed the public order law, which had been used by the former regime to target women and restrict individual freedoms.
Similarly, the Joint Council endorsed a bill that reviews the crime of apostasy and the age of criminal responsibility for children. It criminalizes female genital mutilation and eliminates some of the discriminatory measures against women. We also commend the establishment of the Legal Reform Commission to review national laws in accordance with human rights obligations.
Former Sudan President Omar al-Bashir was toppled in a military coup in April 2019 after 26 years of repressive rule. On July 14, 2008, the International Criminal Court issued a warrant for al-Bashir's arrest. He was cited for crimes against humanity, war crimes, and genocide in Darfur. Sudan's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Osman Abu Fatima Adam Mohammed, says his country is still living with the impact of this terrible legacy. He speaks through an interpreter.
Sudan suffered for decades of very serious and complex economic problems because of war, conflicts, boycotts, and sanctions, together with being blacklisted as terror-sponsoring countries, which deprives it of financing by international financing institutions and prevented it from having its debts written off.
The ambassador says he welcomes the UN High Commissioner's call for nations to lift the crushing sanctions imposed on Sudan during the rule of the previous regime. He says this is the only way to break the cycle of poverty, which is impeding his country's social and economic development. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
scientists in Africa are working around the clock to find a solution in the fight against the spread of the coronavirus. A top epidemiologist, Dr. John Ngengasong, says scientists across the continent are doing clinical testing and trying to find groundbreaking ways to apply African knowledge to this global threat. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Africa was never going to escape the spread of the coronavirus, the continent's top epidemiologist says. He adds that African scientists and doctors are applying lessons they learned from the continent's battle with the HIV pandemic and stepping up their role in the fight. Dr. John Ngengasong, director of the African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, says labs, epidemiologists, and doctors are hard at work across the continent, which has now recorded more than 640,000 cases of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. More than 6.5 million tests have been conducted, most of them in hotspot countries like South Africa, Egypt, Nigeria, Ghana, and Algeria. He said 64 clinical drug trials are currently happening, and South Africa is leading the continent's first vaccine trial. Eventually, he said, if a successful vaccine is found, African countries should be allowed to produce and distribute it themselves.
It is a strong belief that Africa should play an active role in the process of development of the vaccines and uptake of the vaccines, and not wait until vaccines are developed before distributed in Africa. So we are positioning the continent to play a coordinated role to enhance and accelerate the clinical trials of any promising vaccine candidates on the continent.
Additionally, he said scientists are convening with traditional medicine practitioners to discuss how they can contribute. And the African CDC is supporting laboratories in Ethiopia, Senegal, and Nigeria that are working to sequence the virus's genome. But he said the fight cannot be won by scientists alone. He laid out the continent's plan of action.
We need to ramp up testing. We need to trace those who are infected and isolate them and make provisions for appropriate treatment. The second thing we must do is to engage communities very actively. The battle against COVID-19 is that will be decided at a community level. And without proper community engagement, community ownership and response, we will not be able to conduct the appropriate contact tracing and care. And lastly, we are calling on all countries in Africa, member states, to ensure that we have a policy of universal masking. That is, we should all wear masks when we are in open, in public places there.
While he and South African officials also noted that COVID-19 testing is improving, both in terms of the number of tests and in terms of the speed of results, the number of confirmed cases is keeping pace. As of this week, he said, the continent is seeing an average of 17,000 new cases per day. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Still on COVID-19, European leaders held their first physical summit today since the coronavirus lockdown began. The goal is to move forward from the pandemic amid sharp differences over a proposed economic recovery fund. For VOA News, Lisa Bryant has more on the stakes from Paris.
European heads of state will seek agreement over a proposed $856 billion pandemic recovery fund and to discuss the bloc's next multi-year budget when they meet Friday in Brussels. Neither issue promises to be easily resolved. Backing the recovery package are hard-hit southern countries like Italy and Spain, which would benefit most from the proposed mix of loans, aid, and grants. On the other side are the so-called Frugal Four, the Netherlands, Austria, Denmark, and Sweden, which warn spending must be responsible.
Es wäre wünschenswert, sehr schnell ein Ergebnis zu erreichen. Ob das Freitag
Europe's traditional powerhouses, France and Germany, have joined forces to support the package. Even so, Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany, which currently holds the EU rotating presidency, expressed uncertainty earlier this week that a deal will be struck at the Brussels summit.
I think Angela Merkel is pretty determined to reach an agreement.
Rosa Balfour is director of the Carnegie Europe Research Organization in Brussels.
What she has said to be cautious is that if it's not this weekend, it will be in coming weeks.
At stake are many things: European unity, the direction of financial markets, but also lightening up a heavy EU agenda that includes other key issues like finishing up Brexit, Britain's departure from the European Union. Tara Varma, head of the Paris office for the European Council on Foreign Relations, says that the final funding agreement may look quite different from the original proposal.
But if ultimately they make it, that is quite a breakthrough. And honestly, it's a big move forward for the Germans also to be able to implement the rest of their agenda, which is quite massive.
There are other stumbling blocks. Some researchers warn the rescue fund will siphon green investments needed to meet the EU's ambitious climate goals. And Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban says he may veto any deal linked to rule of law criteria. Analyst Balfour says EU leaders might bow to Hungary's demands, at least this time.
But in the long term, I do think it's an existential threat for the EU, because the EU is so tied to the fact that it is formed by democracies.
The two-day summit takes place amid EU estimates the bloc's economy will shrink 8.3% this year before growing in 2021. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The acting UN humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan, Dr. Mohamed Egg Ayoya, has strongly condemned the recent killing of two aid workers and four residents of Duck County in Jonglei State. Dr. Ayoya is calling for swift action by authorities to ensure the safety and security of humanitarian personnel across the country. International NGO staff were providing health care to community members in Pajut town center of Duck County when the area came under attack by unknown gunmen. Ayoya called on South Sudan's government to protect humanitarians who are taking what he calls significant risks to provide much-needed aid to people who are living in a state where armed violence is on the rise, combined with the threat of COVID-19. This latest attack brings the number of humanitarians killed in South Sudan since 2013 to 122. The UN says Sudan is facing the worst food security crisis recorded in recent history. It says nearly 25% of Sudan's 45 million population are severely food insecure, including those living in the capital, Khartoum. Humanitarian partners in Sudan released an integrated food security phase classification report this month. It shows 9.6 million Sudanese are in high acute food insecurity due to conflict, high inflation, and COVID-19. Earlier this month, about 10 humanitarian partners, including USAID, the World Food Program, and the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, released its June through September IPC report, which is a highly technical report focused on food insecurity in Sudan. And finally, authorities in Malakal have arrested three civilians and two soldiers suspected of being involved in the killing of a senior judge in the Upper Nile state capital of Malakal on Monday. South Sudan's national police spokesman says an investigation is underway and that those responsible for the death of Judge Thomas Aban Akol Ajewin will be brought to justice. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Shida Yango by Jose Chameleon.
Been listening
listening to Jose Chameleon with the song Shida Yangu. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not run away from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.